Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, August 3rd. Welcome to Behind the Numbers Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I am your host, Sarah Lebo. Today, we're talking about economic uncertainty with two veteran Reimagining Retail guests. First, I'm joined by principal analyst covering retail and e-commerce, Andrew Lipsman. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Sarah.
My other guest is principal analyst of retail and e-commerce, Susie David Canyon. Welcome back, Susie.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right, let's get started with our first segment, news and reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline is a July 27th piece from Retail Dive titled, "Will Macy's Off-Mall Bet Pay Off?" With malls in decline, Macy's is speeding up its move into strip malls under the banners Backstage and Market by Macy's. Susie, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is?
So I think it's not new. Macy's has been working through, and Macy's is not the only store that's a full-line store thinking about small store formats. So it's not new. It'll be interesting to see how they evaluate if their stores are working in the smaller format. And more importantly, it'll be the execution that will be critical, right? They're trying to figure out a way to, in their own words, celebrate discovery and convenience, which we know that most of the large Macy's are neither, right? You can't find what you're looking for, unfortunately. And I love them and I shop there all the time. So I'm speaking from experience. And, you know, it's really hard to get help to figure out what you need and to go through the system quickly when you're at the store. So having a smaller footprint should help. I think having a curated assortment should also help. I think what will be also critical for them to figure out is how to use data to have the right product in the right store. And the last piece on this is the strip mall. There was a long time where the mall itself was sort of falling apart and it was falling out of favor. I think we're starting to see a little bit of a turn through pandemic that the mall is sort of seeing a resurgence. So it'll be interesting to see about the strip mall aspect.
Understood. All right, Andrew, your review of this headline about Macy's in 60 seconds is?
I'm just going to point to what Susie said as the resident Macy's expert. No, to add to her point, which I fully agree with, listen, Macy's has a ton of exposure to malls, which just continue to decrease in foot traffic. Yeah, there's a little bit of a rebound effect this year, but it's probably temporary. Long term, they need to quote unquote, reimagine retail in environments that will be better for foot traffic. And that likely means strip malls, more outdoor. And I have a hard time envisioning a traditional Macy's in those environments. I think of them in the mall. So I feel like it's the right move to go with the new formats and see how it works. I don't know if they will, but I think it's the right strategy.
Sure. I genuinely can't remember the last time I was in a mall or in a Macy's. So I'm excited to see where they go with this. All right, so now it's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today, we're talking about economic uncertainty in retail. I want to know if the sky is falling. But before we start the section, I do want to be clear, we are not economists. We will not be speculating on whether or not we're in or headed toward recession, but we will be talking about retailer and consumer risks. So last week, the US GDP fell by 0.9%. That marked two consecutive quarters of shrinking economy, which is a common definition of recession. Gas prices peaked above an average of $5 per gallon in June, but they've fallen about 70 cents on average since then, as of July 28th, which President Biden noted is good news. Walmart's profit forecasts are down, but other companies like Coca-Cola are doing well. So my head is spinning. Andrew, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of doom and gloom headlines. And I think that's part of why we're talking about this today is trying to sort through the headlines and get closer to what's reality and how should we think about the state of the economy right now. Historically, if it bleeds, it leads. So there's probably a bit of a bias towards some of the negativity. But as you noted in the intro, there are some silver linings here, bright spots, or maybe things that we're not fully appreciating in the economy, right? We just met at least one common definition of recession with two declining quarters of growth. But that follows, you know, historically strong growth rates in consumer spending over the past 2 years. We also have about the tightest labor market of my lifetime at 3.5 or 3.6% unemployment. So those two things generally don't go hand in hand. So I think that's what we need to wrestle with here is what is the real state of the consumer economy right now? And is it that bad?
Well, and it's the mixed headlines, right? There is a lot of doom and gloom. I mean, Wells Fargo has now said that we are in a recession. Citibank has said there's a 50-50 chance that we'll go into a recession. There are so many different banks that have different opinions on whether it's going to happen, how long it's going to happen, how hard it's going to be. Is it going to start anytime soon or is it going to be into 2024 even, there are some saying. But like Andrew just said, and as you noted, there are so many mixed messages, right? And so as retailers and brands, how do you take those mixed messages to see what can you do? We know everybody's talking about inflation. Inflation is at an all-time high, 9.1 year on year in June, which is extremely high. When you strip out the cost of food and energy, and it's a different index, personal consumption expenditure index, it's at 4.7, still pretty high. But as Andrew noted, the labor market is tight. And so what that means is that employers are struggling to get employees, and so they're willing to pay them at a higher rate. And so there is money floating around. It's just that people are worried. And so one of the headlines I saw, I don't know if you guys saw this because we talk about this a lot, was a CNN headline around, are we going to talk ourselves into a recession, right? And I think that's probably what we're also trying to figure out as we have this conversation.
One other point I'll add to that is the negativity around the word recession is understandable. And, you know, at least in this definition we're talking about, looks at declining growth over a couple of quarters. Putting in context, you know, maybe some level of recession had to be inevitable as consumer spending finds its water level coming off these gains. Like maybe some of this was inevitable. And to me, that's part of why, okay, if you're comparing back to recent history, you kind of have to go in the wrong direction at some point. But given that that's happening while we're still at full employment, maybe we just need to think about how we think about a recession a little bit differently, or at least this recession.
Well, and I think, you know, it all sort of started during the pandemic. Inflation is not new. It's just that it's reaching these incredible highs, and it's all these different components that are coming together that are just making it worse, whether it's, you know, the climate change that's impacting commodities. So there aren't enough sunflowers, so you can't have sunflower oil, and that bleeds into a bunch of other things, the gas prices, but it's not just gas prices for your car. It's also petroleum and a bunch of other things. And that's a primary input into a raw material into a lot of goods. So I think it's the shortages plus the demand that was really high that started the inflation a long time ago. And we are just now struggling to figure out how to keep it because it seems to me that the people who are in charge of monetary policy have decided that at some point, if inflation is just too high, it is going to cause a negative impact on the economy. And we're seeing that now, right? Consumer confidence has plummeted for the third month in a row. Consumer spending, I think if you strip out inflation, is coming down. I mean, it's definitely coming down, but it's coming down even more when you take out inflation price increases versus just unit. Are people buying more things? We are hearing headlines about people purchasing more travel and experiences and less discretionary items like home appliances. It's all sort of interrelated. And I think the interest rate hike of last week, for me, it's a telltale sign for retailers that there is trouble ahead.
Sure. I mean, this is something that we get at on this podcast a lot, right? Like everything is one thing. So like we can be talking about consumer confidence and consumer spending, like they're different things. But obviously that as it relates to supply chain issues is all sort of one connected system. It sounds from both of you what I'm getting is that like this moment we're at is distinct from the moment we were at, say, like 15 years ago, right? We're in a very specific economic moment that isn't identical to something from 15 years ago. But even if we're not in a recession, or if we are, all of that sort of irrelevant to like consumer experience, people are still hurting, a lot of people, and companies are still hurting as well. Can you talk about that some, right? Like Walmart just issued a profit warning. What else is going on?
Well, let's talk about consumers. So consumers right now, and this ties into consumer sentiment, you said all these things are interrelated and it's very true. So inflation is objectively up about 9%. Consumer spending, retail consumer spending is also up about 9% for the year. So that's a huge number, but it's basically all going to inflation. So consumers aren't getting as much for their dollar as they used to. They're angry about it. They see that gas price every day and it changes their thinking of the economy because their dollar's not stretching as far. And for me, the thing to watch here really is how much of this inflation gets entrenched, right? Gas prices go up sharply, but they also can come back down sharply. So that does change the picture for consumer spending. But other categories, if you think about going into a restaurant, they change the menus when they increase prices. There's a ratchet effect there. The prices go up and they stay there. They don't come back down. You know, in grocery stores, maybe more price reductions, you tend not to see those prices come back down. Whereas other categories like consumer electronics, you actually do have a lot more price competition. So you can see some of those things normalize. So that's part of what I'm trying to think about is how much of this inflation, even if things get better or some of the underlying factors improve as we get into the next couple of quarters, how much of that stays entrenched and is it elevated? And does that ultimately become this self-fulfilling prophecy with the consumer where they're angry about it and they talk themselves into, you know, a full recession?
Well, it'll definitely stay up, right? Like every CPG company is talking about price increases and that they can no longer absorb the cost of the raw materials into the final goods. It'll definitely not go down as a ticketed price, but will CPG companies start doing more buy one, get one free or other sort of ways of reducing the unit price without actually reducing the ticket price is possible. And I think wages won't go down either, right? So once you got a raise because your company is trying to think about inflation and how to keep you, they're not going to say, oh, well, now inflation is back to 2%. So we're going to reduce your salary by X percent. So I think it'll stay comparatively up together. But what's hard is, like you just said, Andrew, the consumers are upset and they're trying to figure out what to do. And it's a psychological thing too, right? The biggest spending that comes is gas and food. And as those things become a bigger part of your wallet, you start to get nervous. And if you don't have more money coming in, then you start to think about paring back.
Now, one point on consumer goods brands is a lot of them have never seen better profits, or at least the profits are elevated. So one of the things is that when you have price increases, a lot of times, especially in thin margin industries, profits increase. We've seen this historically with the oil and gas industry, and we're now seeing it with the consumer goods industry. So they're actually, at least in the near term, taking advantage of these price increases. And their input costs, as you said, they are incurring an input cost, but if those get better, then all of a sudden they're left with even fatter margins.
Totally. You know, one of the things that we said that I'd like to maybe talk through a little bit more, I think it is definitely different because of the pandemic and what happened and all the inputs are a little bit different. But there is a housing bubble that is now happening, I think, or is in the process of happening, which is not that different from, I mean, it's different in terms of the housing bubble that happened before was basically poorly organized ways of lending people money to buy, you know, it was like the sub-mortgage prime, and we don't want to get into that. But now I don't think it's that as much as there's labor shortages, there are input shortages, so there aren't building as many new houses. But because the Fed keeps increasing the interest rates, the cost to borrow money is going up. So now first-time homebuyers and homebuyers in general are also not buying homes. So there is going to be a housing recession. And I think that that's what's going to make a lot of people nervous as well.
That cools off the market though, right? Isn't part of the issue with the tightness of the housing market and the fact that home prices were increasing so much is that there was too much money out there chasing too little supply.
Yes.
So now this helps maybe restore some of the balance to that.
Yes. But then if people aren't buying houses, they're not buying appliances, and then they're not buying other like home furnishing goods, and then they're starting to worry about other things. And so then they're contracting their spending, which is what we're sort of seeing, which is bad for the economy, especially in the US. I think it was like 2/3 of GDP is based on consumer spending. So that's not going to bode well for us.
I wish that we had more time so that I could chase you both down this spiral of this massive system of the US economy and retail trends. We just covered a whole bunch from climate change, supply chain issues, global unrest, gas, housing prices, the pandemic. Before we wrap up this section, I want to know what metrics retailers should be watching.
So,
Susie,
I was like, well, you know, I think we have different perspectives on this, which is what makes it interesting, I think, to listen to. I firmly believe consumer confidence is the number one thing. And there are two different boards that report them. And so just making sure that you keep an eye on both of the boards and seeing. And it's not so much that it's going down. It's just how quickly it's going down and over how many months it's going down. I think that's critical because that is the way people are feeling. And if they're not feeling well, they're not going to spend money.
I have a little bit less confidence in consumer confidence these days. I do watch it. I think it's important. But in weird ways, it's decoupled from consumer spending trends in recent years. So it's, I think it's in part very headline driven. Now, if you see it in a sustained way, it will drive other factors. But
I think consumer confidence lags spending, right? At first, you see the consumer confidence coming down and then spending starts coming down. So I do think if you see it for 3 months that it's coming down by like 2 points at a time, probably not a big deal. But if over the next 6 months it keeps coming down, then I think that's for sure a bad sign.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it can move, you know, quickly in opposite directions. So as long as you don't see it sustained, I think it may not be problematic. I look most closely at unemployment rate. And as I said, right now, it's about 3.6%, historically low. And the reason is if people are employed, they have money in their pockets, and especially lower and middle income consumers who spend, you know, close to 100% of what they make, that fuels the consumer economy. That's the foundation for a lot of economic growth. So that's when I watch. If I see it start to change, and I expect it, you know, as conditions worsen, you might see it start to tick up. The number I would watch is to say if it gets meaningfully above 4 or 4.5%, really is the number that I'd start to be a bit more concerned. But for now, as it's, you know, under 4%, I feel like the foundation of the consumer economy is pretty solid.
So, and you know why this one I find tricky? It's because there is a little bit of underemployment, right, that we don't see in those numbers, and that there are people that are trying to get full-time jobs that are, you know, salaried, and they're having a tough time finding those jobs. And we're hearing about layoffs. And granted, it's just news, right? It's like trying to parse out the difference between the headlines of the layoffs and what's actually happening. And we're hearing about labor shortages, right? And so like all of that coming together makes it really challenging. But the underlying unemployment rate, there are quite a few other numbers behind it. And so I think just making sure that people who are looking for a job actually find a job is the critical thing to think about.
Okay, so Susie is watching consumer confidence. Andrew is watching unemployment. I am watching everything Susie and Andrew write, telling me what to watch. I have asked Susie and Andrew to make some predictions, which we'll talk about after the break. But first, a short message. If you're looking for another great podcast to start your day, check out Behind the Numbers, a daily news podcast from eMarketer. Join host Marcus Johnson and our comprehensive and witty analysts as they break down the digital media, commerce, advertising, and technology landscapes. Tune in to keep up to date with the digital marketing insights and forecasts every professional should know right now. Each day, they'll dissect real-world case studies, provide thought-provoking analysis on consumer behavior trends, and, of course, have a ton of fun along the way. Join the community and subscribe to Behind the Numbers today. Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. This week, Andrew and Susie are ranking three companies that will ride out this economic time smoothly and one they think will have a tougher time. So Susie, give it to me. What's the first company you see riding out this time smoothly?
So we do think that collectively that there are lots of companies that are going to be able to come across on the other end totally fine, maybe suffer a tiny little bit now, but be okay on the other end. So we did narrow it down to three. I pick Costco as the first one. I think that they have a high household income as a shopper base, that are less impacted by inflation, especially the cost of gas increasing. I think that they are taking advantage of everybody channel shifting and trying to consolidate trips. So instead of going to multiple different types of retailers, they're all coming to Costco. Costco has a great assortment mix, has a lot of different types of merchandise, and it has Kirkland brand that has something in everything, and it does phenomenally well. Plus, I think most people think of Costco and think of value, even though you might not be getting the best bang for your buck. I think there is some sort of marketing halo effect that comes with bulk buying.
Sure, that makes sense. We know my official stance on this podcast is that the Kirkland brand beer is great. Andrew, give me another company you think will ride out this time smoothly.
So I think Amazon actually is fairly well positioned to ride this out smoothly, and might sound a little bit ironic coming off some of its tougher quarters. But the reality is people do trust Amazon because of the marketplace to drive strong prices. So I think consumers still rely on it for that. And then part of the reason why I think they're in a better position is we haven't actually seen Amazon's strategy that goes back to about 2018 and 2019 to get to same day and next day delivery fully play out. They were interrupted by the pandemic. and delivery times got prolonged, but now we're starting to see them shorten again. And I think Amazon is going to be able to realize the benefits and the fact that they're in a better position to execute on that right now. And at the same time, their advertising business is growing strongly, which I think will start to help out their bottom line, especially in the second half of the year. So I think they're going to ride this out okay as we get to the back half of the year.
Yeah, I can see how having the funnel of not being strictly a retail company can help Amazon. Susie, I'm coming to you once again. Give me another company that will ride out this economic time smoothly.
So the dollar stores in general, but specifically, I think the Dollar General will be okay in that, first of all, it has so many stores. I think it's around 18,000 stores, mostly in rural areas where there's not a lot of competition. So that's helpful. Obviously, a dollar store is known for lower price points, but they do have national brands as well as private labels. So I think there's a lot of choice. And in particular for Dollar General, they have a few different concept stores, which include, which I didn't realize, a grocery store, DG Fresh. They're getting into healthcare, so they have a diversification sort of revenue that's happening by virtue of having multiple different types of concepts and brands. And I just think that they're continuing, unlike other retailers that are worried about spending, they're continuing to funnel money into their operations by building out distribution centers, opening new stores, and really trying to find their place in a market that is looking for somewhere to go to get better value.
I actually didn't know any of that about the grocery store or them getting into healthcare. We'll have to maybe revisit that in another episode. So,
and I'll just echo Susie on this one. We both had the same list here with Dollar General. Dollar stores in general do much better in these environments. And I think they are particularly well positioned amongst its competitive set.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they're definitely, you know, their whole consumer base are those, it's a demographic that is most concerned about inflation by default, unfortunately. And because they're mostly in rural areas where there's not a lot of competition, they don't have to win out.
Yeah, that makes sense. So dollar stores in general and Dollar General specifically.
Guys, we were very pun heavy there and I'm here for it.
Watch what you ask for. Okay, those were three companies that we think are going to do well. Costco, Dollar General, and Amazon. What is a company that we think might not do as well during this economic uncertainty?
So the first one that came to mind for me was Wayfair. A big part of it is, well, first off, we've seen a lot of buying ahead or demand pull forward in the furniture category because people had money. But it's also the most impacted or one of the most impacted by supply chain delays. So it's not been a great consumer experience. We're seeing that whole segment now have a bit of a tougher road. And the other thing is, in an inflationary environment, when consumers start to pull back spending, they tend to cut back on discretionary high ticket purchases. Furniture is going to be one of the first places to go. So I just don't think that Wayfair is best positioned for this market right now.
Gotcha. Anything to add, Susie, on Wayfair not faring waywardly?
No, I agree 100%. I think any of the stores, even Best Buy just had the profit warning. Any of the stores that are big ticket items, especially given that people bought so much of that, and it's not something you buy every year, right? So many people bought electronics and home furnishings and do-it-yourself type of decoration things during the pandemic. So already they had big comps that they had to worry about. But now that people are cutting back on spending, that's the first place it's going to come. I also think a lot of the vertically integrated apparel and accessory sort of branded stores are going to have a tough time as people pull back and realize that they don't necessarily need that much clothing or footwear.
They don't need a $60 t-shirt, Susie?
Apparently not when you have to pay that much money for gas, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Which we don't know about that because, or I should say not we, I don't know about that because I walk everywhere. But it seems to me like if you have to choose between gas and a t-shirt, it's hard.
Yeah, I was thinking about that psychology, right? Because I walk everywhere too, right? We're New Yorkers. So I don't have to think too much about gas prices, even though they're affecting me as a consumer. But I definitely think about food prices. I'm definitely slower to buy after coming back from the grocery store. Okay, on that note, that is all we have time for today. Thank you for joining me today, Andrew.
Thanks, Sarah.
And thank you, Susie.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and keeps us updated on how Emmanuel, the TikTok emu, is doing. Guys, I didn't look at the emu, but then Stu messaged me today and was like, you have to check out Emmanuel, the emu. So He's doing well. He's a good emu. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail and eMarketer Podcast. And you can tune in tomorrow as Marcus brings you another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer Podcast.
Love a good emu.
I don't even know what that is.
Like the bird? Like the looks like a dinosaur?
Oh, yes. No, I know what that is. There is a Gen Z expression that is emu, I think of a style. Emu, is that what is that? Know what it is?
Emo? Are you thinking of
maybe.
Emo? I think that might be older than Gen Z.
Oh, is it? Oh. I heard about it from my brother's kids and I was like, I don't really understand what this is. And they had a tough time explaining it too, so that wasn't helpful.
Oh, please keep that in the outtakes.